You see, even though we think the best day ever so far in our life was some random event, it wasn't a random event. It was caused by a lot of things that you did as you look back that were a part of that decision. There are very few limbs that fall out of the sky and hit you in the head. Very, very few. See, most of the time, you participated in how it is and how it was that came to be. Most of the time, you in some way participated, even if you didn't know it. Even if you didn't know it, you in some way participated. That is true in a positive way. That is true in a negative way. That is true in virtually every phase of our life. In some way, we have participated in the best day of our life thus far. And the one going forward, we're going to participate in the fact that it happens as well. As a church, two Sundays from today, I'm going to be speaking on a subject called infection election, thinking about the political atmosphere in our country right now. I just thought somebody needed to address that. I just thought it was time that somebody waded in because it didn't seem to me there was enough being said about it. I am going to address that and what it is that we as Christians should be and how we should be. But in the meantime, we're going to talk about how to create the best day ever yet to be in the life of our church. And we have to do that. We have to know, first of all, that it's up to us, that it's possible, and the strategies that we create are going to make that happen. A year and a half ago, we started on something called revitalization. And I want to talk about that this morning, and I want to talk about how it relates to our VBS program. Now, we think that big things and big churches and big events are a result of just gigantic things, when in reality, they are effective use of individuals' time. Effective use of individuals' time. Just individuals, just one person, one person, one person, all using their time effectively, plugging into what it is that we're trying to do. And we're going to talk about that at the end of the service. How is it that I can get involved? 18 months ago, we started on the journey of revitalization. And listen, we knew that somewhere out around 9 months and a year and a half, we would have to put all of this back up on the track again. And here is the reason. You know how we've tried things as a church? Or at home, or a diet, or a lot of different things. You're going to start saving money, all of these kind of things. And then, who knows, after about 6 or 7 months, after 6 or 7 weeks, or after 6 and 7 days, all of a sudden this whole thing falls apart. Okay, now, get this. Anticipate, that's a part of the journey. But the temptation, particularly organizationally, the temptation is to say, oh, we've tried that, and it doesn't work. That's the temptation. I've tried that diet, it doesn't work. I've tried working out, and it doesn't work for me. I've tried saving money, but I don't make enough. In other words, we try these things until the natural point of opposition or barriers begin to push us back, and then we say, well, you know, this has never worked in the past. Listen, it is at those moments that you have to redo what you have done that far. You got to put it back up there, And literally start all over again. Because most of the time, we just let it fizzle out, and then we say, well, you know, that was fun, that was great, that was wonderful. But what happened to it? I don't know, but it doesn't work here. That isn't true. That is not true. We just stopped making it work. We stopped putting it back up there. So the best day in our life as a church is yet to be, because we're going to put it back. We're going to do it again and again. And again, until it sticks, until we change who we are as a culture. I don't know, about 3 or 4 years ago, I became a real fan of virtual reality. I don't know if you know what virtual reality is, but you're going to know. Listen, it's going to be the iPhone of the next year. And different than the iPhone, this is going to be an interrupter that literally changes not just payphones and telephones, but it is going to change our culture relative to entertainment and leisure. It's going to change that. You can write that down and say, you know what? Pastor Ken said that. May the 15th, he said that. Because this is going to happen. Facebook has spent over $1 billion purchasing a virtual reality company. So if Facebook did it, you know that Apple's going to do it. And so you know that just all of those people are going to go this direction. And there is a couple of reasons why this is all of a sudden happening. Virtual reality has existed really for the last 20, 25 years. But you had to have a monstrous computer to make this work. I mean, like NASA or a university or some kind of big corporation that had the capability of having a computer this powerful with this kind of memory. That's the only place you could do it. And about 3 years ago, while I was out in Iowa, I got to ride on this great big combine thing that was virtual reality. It was like maybe 60 feet across the front of it, and it was taking up corn and wheat and all of this kind of things, when in reality, I was just sitting in the cockpit of this, and I could drive it. And listen, when I came to the end of the row, I turned it, wiped out a fence. Okay? Wiped out the fence. It's virtual reality. So I could look back behind me. I could look back this way, and I could see the barn. I could look sideways in front of me. I could even look up, and it was everywhere. Now, the amount of memory and the power of processing that it takes to make that happen is enormous. It's enormous. I mean, you would have to have 300 or 400 gigabytes of RAM in order to do that. Maybe even a terabyte RAM to make that happen. And you'd have to have processes that were just almost inconceivable. Well, in the last couple of years, all of those things are now available. They're in our desktops, they're in our laptops, and they're soon to be in our phones. So they can run this. I mean, 30 seconds of virtual reality probably takes 20 gigabytes of memory. 30 seconds. So you can imagine if you're going to do this for 30 minutes, how much memory that whole process would take. But listen, that's very possible, and it's coming. It's coming. So what is virtual reality? Well, virtual reality, different than other forms of entertainment, has the capacity to affect all of our senses. Now, you can't hardly see this man there, but he's got on this Oculus, it's called, and it's really like glasses with headphones in them, and so the hearing and the eyes are totally absorbed by this, by these goggles, totally absorbed, and it's hooked to your computer, or soon to be your phone. And this is what it has the power to do. Within this world, you can look over here, and if you have one that is in the forest, you can see that direction of the forest, or you can turn and look all the way back, and you can see behind you in the forest, and the adjustment is actual. In other words, it's real. It would be perception and everything, the sounds that you would hear in the forest, the birds, the trees blowing, maybe a limb falling. You see, all of that is real to you, and this whole thing focuses on your senses. It focuses on your senses, your seeing ability, your hearing ability, your touch, your feel, your even smell. All of these things are affected by virtual reality. And listen to this. It starts by suppressing what is real. And listen now. It substitutes this alternate reality. Now, I know that seems complicated, but it's not. It's not. But I'm telling you, it seems real. It seems real. NASA... military use and commercial airlines use simulators, and it's a little bit like this, but this is like the most incredible 3D. You want to reach out and touch it. So here's what happens if you get on a virtual roller coaster and you take a ride. You literally can get sick as a result of the fact that this virtual reality has tricked your mind into thinking that you're falling. tricks you. It makes you think that what you're seeing, what you're feeling, what you're hearing, it convinces you that it's real. It convinces your mind that it's real. And so it can cause you to stumble. And so you have to sit down initially to do it. But you can walk with some of them, and they are aware by virtue of GPS that you're walking, and it sends that signal back and forth. And so it makes that, this is incredible. This is going to be for consumers now. But the truth of the matter is, in all of its realness, it is not real, even though it seems real. I like this one, and I've had ideas about creating virtual shopping experience where you take a picture of yourself with your iPhone and then load it into an app, and then you can go to Neiman Marcus or Walmart or to Macy's and try on clothes, and it'll actually put those clothes onto you so that you can see how they look apart from going there and try them on. And lo and behold, they didn't come out with that. Right there it is. Takes a picture of herself, and she puts it into this app, and she goes to the store, and she tries on this dress. This is alternate reality, not virtual reality, but it's a step in that direction. But once again, it gives you the impression that this is real. This is real. Like, this is actually happening to me. But it's not. It isn't actually happening. It's a fabrication of reality that is totally focused on your senses, and it substitutes these artificial or these unreal stimuluses for reality. First, it has to shut out what is real. And then it creates this sensual reality, meaning driven by your senses, and it immerses you in this alternate reality, and it intoxicates you with this alternate reality. Now, my personal feeling is that this has the potential of being one of the most addictive things that has ever been created. Because, listen, it is perceived to be real. The sounds, visually, your perception as you look around and up, and or as you walk, or as you see an airplane coming out of the sky straight. I mean, you can't help but react because your mind is conditioned in this way. But it's not real. It's not real. And it intoxicates us. It immerses us in the reality of this, making us believe that is so. Listen, here is where the church is. There is this alternate reality. It is. It's not real. It is driven by personalities. It is driven by experiences that seem real to us in the moment. But they're not. I mean, very soon a spiritual relationship is going to be totally a spectator sport in which people assess whether or not they liked it, literally from Sunday to Sunday, from week to week, from day to day. Was it good? Was it great? Or how did you feel about that? Imagine Jesus saying those kinds of things. Wow! It becomes a substitute spiritual reality that our perception is that it seems real, it acts real, it talks real, it feels real, but it's not. It is not. Ultimately, this is the most spiritually isolating thing that has ever been. Just like virtual reality, it is an isolator. It socially permits you to never engage or to create something that gives you the illusion of engagement when in reality it doesn't. It doesn't do that at all. You can program it to meet the right people, to say the right things, to listen. You can immerse yourself as a character in Indiana Jones movie in virtual reality. You can immerse yourself in it. It becomes a surrogate to everything that forces us to engage, listen to this, to engage people. At the end of every teaching of Jesus, there is a real, walking, talking human being. This alternate spiritual reality doesn't end there. It ends by never hurting your feelings, because you know people do. It ends by always appeasing you, and if not, you just merely get a new virtual reality. It's driven by personalities, incredible personalities with unbelievable skills and talents to wow you. The teachings of Jesus wow us only in application. They're difficult. And so I say to you this morning that we have to create something that is authentic, that is real, that is focused on people, no matter what everyone else may do. A couple years ago, there's a movie out called 51st Dates. And the characters in it just kept reliving this same experience. And so it was always as if it was the first date. And so they begin to wonder why their relationship doesn't grow. In Dickens' story of Scrooge, Scrooge is shown three perceived realities. They're called Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas future. Now here's the deal. We can do nothing. We can do nothing. And we can merely relive Christmas past. We can want something better, talk about something better, but always do the same things. Christmas present. We can act in ways that hurt to create a new, the best day ever. The best day ever is always in creating something new. One of the things that I often say when it seems as if your world has fallen apart, and you hear me say this often, if you've come to me with a prayer request or a problem, I always say, problems come in bunches. They come in bunches. I was talking to my parents multiple times this weekend, and you know, my parents were here last Sunday, and my mother's doing great. 3 months ago, she fell down the steps, though, and literally almost died as a result of that. It's been a difficult 3 months. And this last week, they became aware that somebody had stolen my mother's identity. And taken $60,000 out of their checking accounts, of which only maybe a third of that has insurance on it. So listen, it's been a very difficult 4 or 5 months. And you know, what is ironic? My parents are people that they're not on Facebook, they don't check online, they don't do shopping online because they don't ever want that to happen. And listen, it happened anyway. So this is what I say. Listen, Dad, it can be good again. But it will be different. Did you hear that? It won't be the same. It won't be like it was, but it can be good again. It can be great again. In fact, the best day ever is yet to come. And you have to start there. That's possible. The best day ever is possible. It's still yet to be. It can still happen. But you have to start with the idea that that is possible. With this, we're going to finish the scripture, Romans chapter 18, this resurrection life you receive from God. It's not timid, grave-tending life, just sitting around waiting on things to happen. That's not what this life is. In fact, he calls it a resurrected life, a completely new life that was once dead. Think in those terms. The best day of our church's life is not in status quo. It's not in just doing what we've always done. It's a resurrected life. It's a new life. And listen, it's staying with those things even when it's uncomfortable. It's an adventure, he said. Expecting, greeting God with this childlikeness. So what's next, God, for our church, for us as people? What's next? We want to do that. That's where we start. Resurrection life is not waiting to redo what we've done. It is doing something we have never done. First of all, you and I have to be willing to move in a direction before we see results. Faith is acting, really, even before you believe. It's acting before you believe. It's acting before you know. It's like taking a step in a direction. You don't know where this is or whether or not this is going to work, and you continue regardless of what the evidence around you says, because there are these other realities that are telling you all kinds of things. Listen to this. Faith comes after acting. Faith comes to me after I've taken a risk on something. And God rewards a life, this unknown of acting in faith. I want to make this very practical for you, and we're going to continue here next week. Vacation Bible School historically has been one of the most effective events that we have done. Now, you can say that there are these 10 or 12 or 15 people that run Vacation Bible School that are going to make this happen as far as recruiting kids to be involved. And listen, that may have been the way in the past, but that can't be the way going forward. Every single person here this morning has kids in your life, either in your neighborhood, in your family, their acquaintances. And I want you to think about how it is of this week in June, you can get them involved. This isn't up to 15 people that take care of Bible school. This is all of our responsibilities. Yeah, just in little details, in little things that we do. And this is on the church's website where you go to enroll them, where you can go and say, I would like to be a volunteer, or include me in the mailing list. This is on the church's website. It's where you can go to get those kids in your neighborhood enrolled in Bible school. And if you can't do this, go to the information center after church. Listen, becoming what we have not been thus far is not this great big thing. It's little tiny details that we do again and again and again and again. We do these things. It's not glamorous. It's persistence. And in the moment, people don't even see this. But in time, it's made known and it's made real. Revitalization has to be constantly put up on the tracks and even reinvented as we go. We're going to do something with our life. We can choose to do nothing. We can choose an alternate reality that makes us feel good, that makes us think good. But in reality, it isn't or we can work at it. Everybody here this morning, directly or indirectly, has somebody in your life that could be a part of this, and we want that to happen. Would you bow your heads? Father, we thank you for the privilege of doing, of taking these risks in our lives. And Father, I pray that you will renew us as we commit ourselves to continue to do what it is that you've asked us to do. I pray, God, that we'll not become tired or put out at doing these things, but that we will remain energized as you empower us. In your name we ask these things. Amen. This morning we're going to receive the sacraments. And Jesus said, as often as we do this, we look back to what it is that he did for us. This resurrection life started with the death of Jesus, and so today we remember that.